Now stay tuned for To Your Health on WPVC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here's your host, MC Blair.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. It's To Your Health. I'm MC Blair, and I have with me Alice Radley, my stepdaughter. She's going to be producing this show in the future. So, how are you, Alice?
Not bad, Mike. Glad to be here.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it. And we're going to talk about community farming.
Yes, we are.
Absolutely. You know, people who care about protecting the farmland and healthy local food come together to build and support community farms in their neighborhoods. And that's a good thing, right?
Oh, I'd like to think so. Yeah. Being self-sufficient is always a good thing.
Always a good thing. I think we can do that here in Charlottesville at some point. And that offers a lot of benefits to farmers who want to practice sustainable agriculture and communities want fresh, healthy, local, locally produced food, and they can support their community farms. It brings people together. Pretty cool, man. Things like benefits, it says that it improves the quality of life for people in the garden, provides a catalyst for neighborhood and community development, stimulates social interaction, which is always a good thing, right?
That's definitely a good thing. I mean, sort of one of my mantras, if you can call it that, is that you have to hang out with people that don't look like you, don't sound like you, and don't believe the way you do, because that's sort of the best way to get to know your community, and it broadens you as a person. So if this is something that we can use not only to make ourselves healthier, but to, you know, love our neighbor a little bit better.
There you go.
That's certainly a positive thing.
I totally agree. And another aspect of any garden goes beyond the people who work and play there, as you were saying. In ecology, a community refers to the total collection of organisms that interact with one another in a particular place.
We tend to forget that we are indeed organisms. We're not just people. We are living creatures.
Absolutely. And you know, I was at the city market today, and you know, talking to the farmers down there and the various vendors. And those people are committed to doing what they do. It's just amazing the feeling you get.
Well, since I've been in Charlottesville, I've been around to multiple markets, and it seems like this town is a crucible for this particular kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of amazing. Forgive my ums and errs, folks. But what's happening here is incredibly special, and I've never seen anything quite like it. I know that throughout the country there are towns like this doing the things that Charlottesville's doing, but this town has a heck of a lot going for it, especially with all this rain.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They were saying that they really like the rain. A couple of them, however, did say, you know, enough is enough. Although then it seems like it's either raining or it's drought, you know, one of the two.
And I think for the most part, the rain is preferable. And it makes everything so green and pretty.
It does. It absolutely does, you know. I was with Wally and Susan over at Broadhead Farm, who I get a lot of my produce from, and they were saying that all the rain goes into their pond. So they have that supply readily available, even in the times of no rain, they can just pump that right on out of the pond.
Yeah, I would imagine a lot of people around here are using the excess water, collecting it in rain barrels, using gray water, recycling, you know, pretty much anything that they can. Mm-hmm, so it's all positive.
It is. It really is. And the other thing it, you know, community agriculture does is it encourages self-reliance.
Yeah, it absolutely does. It encourages self-reliance. The other thing that it does, and I think this is so important, is that when families get involved, you're teaching kids from a very young age that self, but also healthy eating patterns and how to be a better human, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And it actually, community gardens beautifies the neighborhood, you know, when you've got, especially, you know, getting close to harvest time when the tomatoes and all the fruit and whatever it is that's going is all right there ready to go.
Well, yeah, I mean, the last thing I think a lot of us want to see are a bunch of empty lots.
Yes.
If we can be filling those with gardens and farms and little things for the community, especially if any of these things might help out some of the less fortunate people in our communities.
That was where I was going next, when the urban gardens with Todd Niemeyer and the people over there at UACC, the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, that's what they're doing. And they're bringing that food to the urban areas and the less fortunate by having them work in their own gardens and getting the food.
And what's so exciting about that is, because I know one of your sort of pet projects or pet interests is diabetes,
mm-hmm.
and reducing that. And that is a thing that the incidence of diabetes is higher amongst our lower income people, not only in Charlottesville, but all over this country. And they often live in food deserts. So if we can create, well, food gardens instead
yes.
of deserts,
yes.
we can reduce that problem.
Well, yes. And Alice Waters out in Berkeley started the program Edible Schoolyards many years ago. And as a matter of fact, in 99, the Unified District of Berkeley adopted that for all their schools. So you talk about the empty lots. Of course, you go around schools and it's got grass everywhere. Well, they just plowed it up and made gardens. And now they're feeding the kids. So the kids are actually getting healthy meals and a sense of pride because they helped grow it.
And again, you're teaching these kids sustainability and self-reliance. That's a really exciting thing because these are skills. We live in a very technological society, so a lot of our children are not having the opportunity to learn those old-fashioned skills. And the pride of just raising a tomato plant, something as simple as that, I think can teach a lot of life lessons.
Yes, yeah. And you mentioned diabetes. It's really interesting. The type 2 diabetes, of course, the diet-related. There was a study done at a Pitkin Health and Spa, and they had 652 people, 200 were new diabetics. That is, they'd only recently been diagnosed with the disease, and they weren't taking any medications. Within the average of 3 weeks, the blood sugar, the glucose levels of the newly diagnosed diabetics had fallen from an average of 164 milligrams to deciliter to 124. So they reduced it immediately within 3 weeks. So they saw that progress really quickly.
And this isn't terribly surprising, given that often, especially in this country, people who are type 2 diabetics got there by eating their way into it.
Yes.
So, and that's not a slight on anybody. We have a thing in this country called the Standard American Diet. There's a reason that it sounds sad, Standard
yes,
American
yes.
Diet. And we need to learn a new way to eat. Because it's killing us.
It's true.
It is sort of fundamentally killing us. Food that should be nurturing you is destroying.
And exactly. One of the farmers I interviewed, Carter Wallace, he said it's not what you eat, it's how you eat. And meaning that even if you're eating nutritious food, which is good and very important, but you know what my wife and I do before we eat, neither one of us are very religious, but we do sit down, we hold hands, and we thank the farmers where that food came from.
I know that lady. That's my mom.
I know.
But yeah, the whole ritual of sitting down to, I mean, you're slightly older than me.
Yeah.
But people of your generation, often you went to a table. It was set. You
exactly.
sat down, you ate a meal. When I was growing up, we always ate in front of the television.
Yeah.
So that same woman who you sit and give thanks with used to sit in front of the TV. The other thing, and I think this is sort of fundamental in terms of the way we eat, is processed food. Yeah, I know. I just said a bad word. I'm sorry.
No, you're right. You're right. You're right.
But generally speaking, if what you're eating came out of the earth or out of an animal, and it is as close to, they often say, you know, if your grandparents would recognize it as food, eat that.
Yeah.
If your grandparents would not recognize it as a food product, put it down. That is, of course, isn't to say that we don't always, you know, occasionally have a splurge. I like cheesecake, as a for instance.
Sure.
But generally speaking, since I started eating a more whole food, and I don't mean Whole Foods the store, a whole foods based diet.
Sure.
My whole life's changed, and
yeah,
I think yours
wow,
has too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely has. And you know, I recently read an article, and the gal was talking about it as a doctor, and she said, "There's no such thing as junk food. There's junk and there's food." And, you know, so, and you know, another thing was, if it has a list of ingredients, don't eat it, you know, basically.
More or less. Yesterday I was in the grocery store. I'm not going to say which grocery store, but I saw a thing called cannoli chips. of all the things in the world that didn't need to be turned into a chip, it's cannolis.
No kidding.
That's food in air quotes. You know, it's not really, it's not food, it's food.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing. It seems like there's sort of an endless appetite in this country for more and more processed foods, more inventive things, more colors, more. I mean, that's how we are as Americans, though. We do tend to consume everything's loud and big, giant McMansion houses, giant cars, giant food.
Yep.
It's not good for us. It's just that simple.
Yeah, it absolutely is. You know, it's crazy. And more back on community agriculture, not only does that produce nutritious food, it actually reduces family and food budgets, believe it or not, because they're getting the food that they're growing and they don't have to pay for the grocery store. They're just investing their time.
In essence, you're cutting out the middleman.
Exactly.
You're going direct to the fresh food you're pulling right out of the ground. And the less sort of, what do you call it, let's call it lag time between you and your food is all the better. If you have to wait for it to be trucked in, you know, from five states over, and it's been sitting on a shelf and it's been treated with all of the things that they treat, say, like fruits and vegetables with to keep them pretty.
Right.
That's not food.
No.
As much as it looks like a tomato or it looks like a cucumber, it's not. It's something entirely different. It's a commodity.
That's exactly right.
But the things that you can grab from your community garden, that's food.
I know. And the other things are, it creates an opportunity for recreation, exercise, therapy, and education. One of the gals at City Schoolyard Gardens, Jeanette Abbey Nader, was saying that the kids, they'll use the gardening and the growing and all that to teach math, you know, so they can, and then all of a sudden the kids are doing way better in school because of the community gardens.
So you can essentially take gardening and make it a multiple disciplinary kind of thing.
Yes.
Where it applies to so many different factors. I noticed that you also said sort of in terms of mental health and being active. That's another thing, along with our standard American sad diet, it's the lack of exercise. We either drive everywhere or don't go anywhere. Everything's delivered in. And so getting active and being part of that whole process, it has to be tremendously fulfilling and, well, you know, gives you an opportunity to lose a few pounds.
Well,
and I think we
absolutely.
All need to do that.
Yeah, baby. You know, definitely need to do that. There was a guy, Will Allen, who's an actor, but more of an activist. He received a big grant from one of the, I wish I knew the exact one, but it was one of the people that you hear on NPR as one of the major supporters of NPR, one
MacArthur?
Of the foundations. I think it was MacArthur Foundation. And he took that money and revitalized the greenhouses in inner city Milwaukee. It turns out back in the 20s and prior to that, they had greenhouses that fed the city, you know, and then they were just abandoned because of, you know, the way the food movement went, more packaged food and all that. And so those were just sitting there, not functional, and he got them functioning again. A lot of the inner city kids are in there growing. They get the free food. They get the pride. They work together with other peoples of different cultures. And now you have this whole brand new movement of youth that are coming up with an entirely different perspective than their older siblings or parents did.
And one of the fortunate things about Charlottesville is that we have many of those potential benefactors here in town.
We do.
We are gifted in so many ways, and that's one of the most important ones in terms of this conversation.
Exactly. And I got to tell you, the UVA has a lot of land that was donated by various places. One of them was the Kluge Foundation, and she donated a ton of land to UVA. Some of that is being used, Morven Gardens, but there is many more acres of land that can be utilized. It just needs that i.e. funding or a core group of volunteers, I think, to get that land producing.
And hopefully that's part of what this show is doing, is helping to educate people who might be in a position to do these things, to either participate as farmers and helpers to obtain food for themselves, or our lovely benefactors out there.
Yes.
Who might not necessarily know what to do with all that money they have.
I know. And the other thing is, if you get the community garden and some greenhouses to have produce that is, you know, is not normally in season in this area, you can have greenhouses that can produce that. And then that creates income opportunities for other people that if they show a flair in that, for instance, they could be working in that garden at $15 or $18 an hour and wouldn't need to work two or three jobs.
And not only that, I mean, there's all the ancillary products that come from a farm. We're talking about making soap or beauty products. There's so many things that you can do. I mean, if you're growing herbs, you can make, you know, bath products. There's so many opportunities and avenues for financial fulfillment, if you will, in terms of it's more than just food.
I never thought of that.
Yeah. That's why I'm here.
That's great. Yes, of course. And then, you know, obviously you want to have several hives, beehives, for the pollinization. And
Because if bees go, we go too.
Yeah, Einstein said that. I think we follow about 4 years after the bees are gone, something like that, because nothing is pollinated.
And nothing's more beautiful and delicious than local honey.
Oh, I know.
You can't beat it. So that's another product.
Yeah, and there's then the wax, the beeswax.
The beeswax, yeah. Which, again, that goes into cosmetics.
Right.
You can go into products for you know, doing your shoes, shining your shoes up. So we could, when you talked about self-sustainability and self-reliance, that's what we're talking about.
Yes.
Is not only the food, but everything that's attached to it. And so much of our lives is attached to what we eat.
Absolutely.
In terms of the products that we use in our daily lives, and that's sort of, not to be too political about it, but one less dollar we can put in a corporate pocket.
Yes, absolutely. And believe it or not, it would provide opportunities for intergenerational and cross-cultural connections.
Well, we're intergenerational right here.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're X amount of years old,
yeah.
And I'm a few years younger than that. And we're sitting here having this conversation. So this in and of itself is a start.
Yeah. No,
hopefully,
you're right.
I do believe we're inspiring people out there, right?
That would be great. Yes, we need to, you know. I read an article about community gardens bringing people together. They're creating a sanctuary of kindness. Boy, we need more of that. We need more kindness.
Yeah, there's not quite enough kindness in the world.
No, it's true. It really isn't.
And again, this is that kind of town where everybody I've come in contact since I've been here, and also Waynesboro, I have to say, has been so friendly and so nice.
That's nice to hear.
There's obviously there's something happening in this town that puts a smile on people's face.
Yeah. This guy that they were using an example, he actually decided to become a stay-at-home dad and take a permaculture class. His task was to design a permaculture-based project.
Clarify for a second, what's permaculture?
Basically, it's a garden, okay. You know, that is not a monoculture, not one variety. It's many different varieties.
I see.
And it's sustainable, because then you rotate your crops and that sort of thing. But it turned into what is known as what actually turned into a community garden in his neighborhood. And it's a place where people can come and get their hands in the soil and do something about the challenges they seize. According to the co-founder, it's become an open and welcoming community where everyone is allowed harvest edibles and share their knowledge. So there you go.
So we're talking about something that's not only going to reduce people's weight, reduce their blood sugar, possibly eliminate their type 2 diabetes,
yeah.
But also something that was reducing depression, reducing anxiety,
yes.
Making you feel more a part of the people around you. I mean, so many of us live in apartments. We don't know our neighbors. We live in an isolated way. It's sort of how this, again, how this country is. We can be really shut off and be inside of our own bubbles. And that can be sort of detrimental to your mental health. And if you're actually being able to take part in this, share in these things, it might be a better place.
No, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head there. And you are listening to Your Health here on WPBC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And I'm talking to my stepdaughter, Alice Radley, who will be the producer of this show. We'll be back. Okay, we're back. talking about community-based agriculture. And one of the things I wanted to say right now that, and I've said it before here, the word organic, it's been hijacked, folks. And so that's another reason why the community-based agriculture is so important, because then you know where your food came from right away. You know it was sustainably grown or, you know, biodynamically grown, organically grown. It wasn't grown with pesticides or herbicides or fungicides. And that's what's important. Get the chemicals out of that food.
It's important for people to sort of understand that, that organic has almost become a nebulous concept.
Yes.
It doesn't mean anything. You're much more likely to benefit from your food if you just know, as you said, you know, who produces it. How is this produced? It's sort of being part of the process of that. And in the long run, it's a lot better for you. Now, of course, things that are organically grown, they do use pesticides. They use organic pesticides. It is a different product. We're not talking about Roundup,
right?
But there are pesticides used, so we have to clarify that just for the sake of understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I saw a study done with using the Pima Indians in rural Mexico, and the other group of Pimas, they were separated about 700 to 1,000 years ago, which is hardly enough time for evolution to take over. So they're basically the same. And the ones that are in rural Mexico are thin, strong. They work the land. They use simple tools, and their diet consists entirely of the foods they grow. You know, beans, potatoes, corn, seasonal vegetables, and maybe once a month they catch a chicken. You know.
And goodness gracious, I'm so glad that you mentioned seasonal eating.
Yes.
This is so important. We have gotten so used to, again, as an American society, to be able to have whatever I want, whenever I want.
Yep.
It's December, I want an orange.
Yeah.
And when you eat seasonally and locally, everything's a lot tastier when you go with what is in season that moment. There's nothing quite like spring asparagus.
Yeah.
Or an August strawberry.
Oh, yeah.
They're not good the rest of the year.
No.
And that's why you have to add sugar to your strawberries if you're eating them in December. Don't do that. Just wait until they're good.
Wait until they're good and ready
be
to go.
Be patient.
Yeah, absolutely. The other group of Pimas, the ones that are in Arizona, prior to World War II, and this is really key, they rarely developed type 2 diabetes. Now, after World War II, they are among the fattest people in the world. They have something like 70% of her type 2 diabetes. It's so terrible because prior to World War II, they didn't eat refined grains and sugars and fatty animal products. Now they're eating all that stuff in Arizona. So it's the same. They're the same as their counterparts in rural Mexico. So genetically, they're the same. It's diet. That's it. That's the only thing that's changed is diet. The ones in Arizona today are eating processed foods. They're going to the grocery stores and they rarely work in the field. The farms that they work all are automated, so they don't get the exercise that they would normally get if they were working a family farm.
So we're really missing out. I mean,
yeah.
You have to figure that this group of Pima Indians or Native peoples, forgive me, are not atypical. It's gotten to the point where, if you think about any time you sit down and watch television, you see a commercial, how many products do you see that treat type 2 diabetes?
Yeah, a bunch.
They're a bunch.
All, yeah.
That's become the default position.
Exactly. Take a pill.
Take a pill. But not only that, but that people have type 2 diabetes.
Yes.
Not to keep harping on the subject, but
right.
It does seem like that's the default. Most Americans, you know, not most Americans, I can't say that, but a lot of Americans are walking around with something that they could so easily change. It almost breaks your heart.
I know.
It almost makes you mad, but you can't get mad.
No, absolutely.
Because that's not productive and it doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I know. And it's funny, they ask the question, should we all take up plows and return to the 19th century? Of course not, you know, but we can learn a lesson even from the Amish in the Lancaster area of Pennsylvania. You know, they're physically active throughout the day. They make their own foods in much of the same way as their ancestors did. But the Amish diet is higher in fatty dairy products than most people, but yet only 3% are overweight, and almost none are obese.
Well, it's because they're working off that diet. I mean, if you look at people, let's say 1900 in this country, people were waking up and eating fat back, eggs, full fat milk, but they were also going out and working their tails off all day. So it's kind of a different thing. And you're seeing that creep in a little bit more in this country. A lot of offices are using what they call standing desks. They have treadmills in offices. Because we do live in a sit-down society, the more automated we become, the less active we are. And not everybody has the time on the weekends to get out. People, they have their kids, they have their lives. There's a lot going on. But if you can take that hour out of the day, or even a half an hour, just to whip by your local farm, if you have one available. And, of course, we're speaking to the Charlottesville community here.
Yeah.
We are so fortunate to have that. Not every town does. But I think the wider goal is to make that something that's in every city.
Yeah, absolutely. It absolutely is. And we can do it, folks. We really can, right here in River City, as they say.
Yeah, to throw something in that's a little hippie-ish. There you know, used to be the sign, I think, in 68, 69, 70, from John Lennon and Yoko Ono, mm-hmm. War is over if you want it.
Yeah.
It's your choice. So diabetes is over, type 2, if you want it. These farms can be available if you want it. You just have to ask for it. And if you're not asking for it, actually get out there and make it happen. The only thing that's stopping you is you.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. And, you know, one of the other things that in this that we face in the food justice, if you will, is accessibility. And the urban gardens will bring that accessibility to less fortunate.
I mean, that's why we have a phrase, food desert. There are people living in rural Mississippi, rural Alabama, or even urban Mississippi or urban Alabama. I'm just using those two states as an example. This happens in all 50 states in this country, who have no access to mm-hmm. fresh fruit. They mm-hmm. don't even have local good grocery stores. They have corner shops. Or what do they call it in America? Why am I losing my perspicacity for that? You know, convenience stores.
Convenience stores.
That's where they're
absolutely.
Buying their food.
Yeah.
That's where this is coming from in these communities, and they simply don't have access. And at that point, when there's nothing else, you're left to eat fast food 3 times a day, you know, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Unless you have a community garden.
That's true. That's true. So I just got word that couple folks in Virginia Beach are streaming this show, and that's Woody and Lindsay. So, hey, how are you guys? I hope you're doing well and eating the right kind of foods.
Yo.
We're going to be talking to Michael Clark of Planet Earth Diversified in just a few minutes, probably the last 20 or 25 minutes of the show. Food security is an incredibly important, and again, why you need the community-based agriculture, because then you don't have to worry about the trucks bringing the food in from out of town if there's a trucker strike or whatever. You don't have to be
beholden
to outside forces when you have a strong community-based agricultural design model for your community.
And this is, you know, what we're talking about in terms of those food deserts, removing those food deserts, creating those food gardens,
yes.
As we said. It is amazing how many fingered it is in terms of what it reaches out to. Or
yeah.
Armed, maybe armed is better.
Yeah, no, it's true.
So it's exciting. It feels very exciting to be part of this, I think. Don't you?
I do. I absolutely do. It's incredible what can be gleaned or benefited from how community-based agriculture can really bringing people together. I guess that's the most, to me, that's the biggest benefit, is bringing people together. And you know, as community, and as well, obviously, as raising the good food and providing the good food to all people of the community.
And I think that's incredibly important to sort of level the playing field. We have a model in this country, and boy, do I go on about America, where we have a two or even sometimes three-tiered system where the wealthy and the privileged have access to a certain kind of food.
Mm-hmm.
People in the middle class have similar access, but it is slightly different, and our less fortunate citizens just have nothing. And so there are places in this country where the difference in life expectancy is, it can vary by 20 years.
Yeah.
When there are many of us that are living well into our 80s, there are people that only make it to about 60 because of what they have access to. And of course, there's other poverty issues that go into that. But food is a large part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And the other thing, and I've said it before, but I'll say it a different way. It builds social capital by involving a diverse group of individuals, as we said, from different income stratas, cultures, skin colors, and they have different skills and knowledge. And it's so interesting when you see that, especially at a younger age, the kids, because they're influenced so much by their parents. And if they're coming from a parental environment of hate, you know, this person because they're this religion or that person because they're that skin color or whatever, then the kids meet the kids of those families and work together with them, and they're thinking, wait a minute, no, that's not true. They're pretty neat people.
Yeah, kids aren't fundamentally anything.
Right.
They aren't fundamentally religious. They aren't fundamentally racist. They aren't fundamentally bigoted. Those are all learned things.
They are.
And if you can find a way to unlearn that or catch it before it's taught, you're in a good spot.
Yeah, you can. And you are, actually. Then, of course, there is more community beyond the food production, including the environmental and agricultural education and recreational opportunities. There's a garden, a community garden, that is right next to a park, or it's actually integrated in the park. You know, you've got gardens in the park and, you know, and all that. And they have bands that'll be playing while the people are working in the garden. So it's, you know, so that's really, you know, talk about stress reduction.
So it goes beyond just a park, just a garden. That's my foot.
Sorry.
and becomes, for the lack of a better term, a happening.
Yes.
It's a place to be. It's a place to congregate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is really, really, really cool. Go ahead.
No, it's exciting. It's exciting. And these things can be either happening right now or could be happening in the future. And if you want that, well, keep listening.
Yeah. Heck yeah, man. And no, that's absolutely, absolutely true. We're lucky because the mayor of Charlottesville is totally on board with the City Schoolyard Gardens, the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, and Real Food. He's totally on board with that. So I'm thinking that to get the endorsement of City Council, which, you know, would help get grants, you know, on and on, then the city would be on board. That's, I feel, is closer to being realized, to where the city's on board. And, of course, if they signed off on that, it'd be much easier to get a grant, knowing that the city's behind you.
Well, and it's to the benefit of the local government to have a healthy and happy populace, a healthy group of voters that are actually being, you know, served by the community.
Yes. Oof. Okay. I have got to get Michael Clark on the line here. So.
And where is Michael Clark from?
He's Planet Earth Diversified. And I've actually had him on, it was like about our second show, which was really cool. And we have one ringy dingy.
One ringy dingy, two ringy dingies, three ringy dingies.
Michael. How are you? Hello, Michael. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. I think you're on, man. Say hello.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Want another bag?
No, you're on. You are on the air. So we were talking about community-based agriculture, Michael, and I just to let everybody know, I saw Michael this morning down at the city market, and he agreed to talk to us a little bit. We're, you know, talking about how it benefits the community, things like food security, food access, food justice, if you will. Talk to us a little bit about your experiences with seeing how when people work in the gardens and that sort of thing.
Well, one of the biggest things that we see when people come in to the farm is they had no idea what it took to produce these things, and it's a real eye opener, just the level of effort, and then the risk of what can go wrong. A real appreciation for what happened.
Right. So you have an intern program there too, right?
Yeah. And you know, usually that works out pretty well if somebody spends some time there. If they come in for just a few days or something, it's more like a working picnic,
right.
And it's not that much help for the farm, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How can people, you know, let you know that you're interested in interns? Can they go to your website or?
Yeah, there's some stuff on the Woofer site. People can apply there. The Woofer program's pretty good because they vet both the volunteers and the farm.
Mm-hmm. And do you see it possible if the say the city? Pardon?
That's all right. I was just helping somebody with some ginger here.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes. By the way, folks, he's
we're at the market.
They're at the market right now. Absolutely, doing commerce, you know, which is great.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you? Let's just say the city signed off on taking some of the land that UVA has and putting up greenhouses and gardens and all that sort of thing. What do you think the possibilities of that happening?
You know, we've talked with the Kootners about this repeatedly over at Ix. They mm-hmm. wanted to try to do some stuff there.
Oh.
And they've got a fair amount of land over there.
Yes, they do.
It's always good. I mean, all of the community gardens and things work really well. Todd Niemeyer does some stuff out of the building. What is the building right there on the corner by the Bet Cohen place?
Oh, the Friendship Park?
Where he has...
Yeah, the UACC. Yeah.
Yeah, and so Todd Niemeyer's been doing that quite a lot. And
yes,
the international community loves it because they're so used to growing their own food. It's so hard for them when they get to a place where they can't.
Oh, right. Yeah, he does that, which is really cool. But, I mean, I'm just trying to say how we could, you know, be isolated, not isolated, but self-sustaining right here in Charlottesville. I think if the farmers all cooperated, which most of them do anyway, I know you do. I know you're involved in you know, everything from not only farming and providing really good food for folks, but also in the political scene that so affects what we do as not only farmers but consumers. And you know, I just think we could do that.
Well, you know, this was sort of the concept that Kate Collier had when she pushed several years ago for starting the local food hub.
Uh-huh.
To have a nonprofit organization that would have the warehouse, have the refrigeration, have the distribution network, and would make that sort of communication link between the growers and the buyers and create a local hub of commerce. It's been very difficult. It's expensive to pay for the staff to answer the phones and owning the trucks and having a big warehouse and the electricity to run that refrigeration. And we're all pretty spoiled by being able to walk into the big box stores and and buy pretty packages for half the price of what we might see things at a local farmer's market.
Right. And, of course, the only thing with that is I tell people, you know, you can pay your farmer now or your doctor later. You know? So.
Well, I think the reality is if we don't start paying our local farmers, then all we're going to have is condos and houses and strip malls.
Yeah.
Because all of the land around us is worth so much more as commercial development than it is as farmland. And so it's very hard, even for a multi-generational farm, to just hold on to the land.
Oh, my.
And not have to cash out. We see dairy farmers and chicken farmers, even some of the things that you might call the industrial farming or, uh-huh. or factory farming. And they're not able to replace their equipment or do maintenance or barely even meet the additional regulations. So, you know, grandpa is ending up having to sell the farm. And sometimes grandpa dies before he sells the farm and the estate tax takes the farm away. Where the family doesn't even keep the land that they've had in their family for multiple generations.
Oh, my.
The debts and taxes and then the 30% inheritance tax. Because farmland's worth a lot of money, even if you've got no money in the bank.
Right.
When somebody dies, if they haven't transferred it correctly, the family can lose the whole thing to pay for those estate taxes.
My, I never even realized that. Golly. That's a sad situation, especially if it's been in the family for years.
We've seen huge farms have that problem, you know, where for multiple generations it's been farmed and it's, you know, 1,000, 1,500 acres. It's worth millions when the person dies.
Yeah.
And there is a estate tax. And the family, they're scraping by, you know, month to month, just keeping the things going. They don't have the ability to pay. So imagine somebody gave you something, quote, worth $15 million. They gave it to you. But in order to keep it, you had to pay $5 million this year. How would you do it?
Yeah. Liquidate it for $4.5 million and be on the hook for half, right? Oh, no, that would be terrible. Oh, my gosh. Never even thought about that. I wanted to give our listeners a chance to hear again, because you were on the show a while back, and that was really a good, very informative. Thank you. But you make your biofuel. Is that correct? That fuels your generators for your greenhouses and your equipment and trucks and all that.
Yeah, we do a number of things with vegetable oil,
mm-hmm.
where we can generate heat, we can generate electricity. We can also do that from used motor oil. And so we're providing sort of an environmental service to our local community, garages and small mechanics. We pick up their used motor oil, and we filter it and process it and use it to make electricity and heat our greenhouses. We're also working on a solar project right now where we're putting up a 10-kilowatt array on the ground in between two of the greenhouses, and these are surplus parts that we've had shipped from around the country, and we'll probably put up a 10-kilowatt array for less than a quarter of what it would cost to have it installed.
Oh, my goodness.
So we're doing it all ourselves. You know, we're having to weld the frames and put the stuff together. And
yeah.
You know, having that electrical engineering degree from UVA helps out a lot.
I bet it does. Oh, my gosh. So there you go, folks. That's something.
But Mike, you do know what FARM stands for, right? That's fix and repair machinery.
Fix and repair machinery. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Well, Michael, thank you very much. And folks, you can go to it's planetearthdiversified.com. Is that?
Yep. We got several different websites specifically about things. We got gingeru.com for growing the ginger. We do a sort of a CSA site of our specials.planetearthdiversified.com. I think there's also online shopping at shop.planetearthdiversified.com.
Oh, that's what I also wanted to say about the CSAs. So you do have the community supported agriculture and where people get boxes of food, is that correct?
That's right, and it's quite a good deal. And it works out well for both of us. When we have something extra, we can send it out in the CSAs. But if you add up what people get in their CSA over the year, our CSA is $1,200 a year or $300 every quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick whatever quarters you want to go to. But you end up getting $5,000-$6,000 worth of stuff for that $1,200.
Oh, in other words, if you'd gone to the city market and buy it straight across the table there, then you'd end up spending $4,000 or $5,000 instead of $1,200.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's 16, quite a savings.
16 a pound. Yeah, cool. And so and we also give all of our CSA members a 10% discount when they do buy from us direct. So
oh, wow. Okay.
It's like a Sam's or a Costco, you know, a buying club. You pay a fee in and you get a discount and you get special deals all the time. I wish we could do it more like a big box store and have that many people doing it.
Mm.
Wow. And that would be an excellent idea for something, which you're talking about, a community supported agriculture and more of an industrial scene. To have something like a food hub actually have a retail outlet where people can walk in and buy. But
exactly.
You know, the customers are pretty spoiled by having lemons, limes, and apples every day of the year, and they aren't grown every day of the year.
Right.
So, you know, we're just used to that stuff. But we're also seeing some of the impact of people getting sick or contaminated products. I don't know how many times. I mean, people love our fresh turmeric because there have been so many reports of lead-contaminated turmeric powder showing up in health food stores. So that's one thing that you get with the local community is you've got somebody you know, and you have some connection with them and where the food's coming from and any issues you might have with it. And they're living on that farm, eating that food too. They're not going to mix melanine in the milk powder.
Yeah, let's hope.
Sell it for your baby formula.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Or contaminate their turmeric with lead, or
wow.
You know, their own family is going to suffer from that.
Right.
So it's I wish there was more of what we used to have in the past, like the barn raisings, where you know 100 people in the community would get together and then 3 days, put up a barn that take a farmer $200,000 or 10 weeks to put up.
Right. And then that's just another example of community supported, the ancillary of the community supported agriculture. So yeah, that's great, Michael. Well, I appreciate it. And, really do appreciate you talking to us, Mike. That's, really,
you bet.
Really good. Thanks very much. Talk to you soon. All right. Bye.
You take care. Bye-bye now.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a heck of an interview.
Yes, he's good, isn't he?
He is. And it's interesting that he brought up the idea of a barn raising. And that kind of goes into the idea. I mean, first of all, it kind of made me laugh. But also, it goes into the idea of how not integrated we are as a community and how out of touch we are and how we don't know our neighbors. If you're in that situation where you don't know your neighbors, you have no reason to get emotionally involved with your neighbors, why would you want to help them?
Right.
But if you actually know them as people and you see them as, you know, literally as people and not just these characters that drift in and out of your life, you actually want to help.
Well, that's true. And he, again, on the idea of the barn raising, that's kind of where insurance came in. Where you had the concentration of people that didn't know each other, and if something went wrong, if you know whatever their house burned down or something like that, the neighbors didn't all come together and help them out and put up a new house, so that's why they would have insurance. Whereas back in the day, if your barn burned down or your house burned, then the whole community got together and put up a new one, you know?
Well, now, in a way, we have something similar in that we have GoFundMe and we have Kickstarter. There are all these websites that exist that can help people when they're in that situation, except rather than just being community-funded, it's almost world-funded. There's a whole slew of people that can help you if you're sick, if you lose your house, if you lose your job. It's
That's
kind
true.
Of amazing.
So it's as opposed to the local community, it's like your Facebook community, if you will.
Yeah, that's becoming more common for people, well, younger than me. That's the way of the world now.
Right. Well, we are almost to the end, and I've got my two-minute drill right here.
All right,
ready
let's hear
to go.
It.
Well, I just wanted to ask people, I said, you know, I get a lot of people that, you know, based on my religion, this couldn't be or that couldn't be. And I say, well, if you do believe in God or any other intelligent design model, then it stands to reason that you must also believe the diets of the earliest humans, the hunter-gatherers, the times before committed agriculture and long-distance communication devices must have all also been intended or created. They varied significantly, but were always locally sourced and seasonal because that's all that was available. The diets ranging from pure animal protein and fat 10 months of the year in the Arctic regions to insects, lizards, amphibious, and hundreds of plants all year in Africa, though radically different depending on the location, that were correct for those people, providing the necessary nutrients. And the reason that we are so sick today is because we, as a whole, we've discarded the intended diets that were originally designed or created for our optimum health, depending on where we live. This is the reason we at To Your Health are so committed to a community-based food system as a viable way to reduce obesity, type 2 diabetes, and general health care costs, plus achieving a more cooperative and culturally interconnected local society like we were talking about. The To Your Health staff will also be proactive by providing a conduit for the voices of the many established local food programs, plus administrators and city government officials to further this important agenda. Now, you enlist as listeners can help by volunteering, contributing, and purchasing as much local, sustainably grown and raised foods as possible. Your bodies and your children's improved health will thank you in many ways. Now, I want to thank Alice Radley for producing the show today, and also listen for her science updates and interviews with UVA scientists and others in the near future. I'm MC Blair, and remember, eating real food, mostly sourced from our community providers, is key to your health.
You've been listening to Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Be listening again next Saturday at 11 for To Your Health. The show is produced by Ben Chambers, production assistance from Mike Friend.